He knows everything you need to know about local high school sports. Back to the Rudin Report with Dave Rudin on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Good morning and welcome to the Rudin Report Live. I'm Dave Rudin, and as of right now, my vacation is over. I'm not going to do too much of an intro here because we got an action-packed 90-minute show with six guests. In between seasons, we'll get into spring sports preview next week, but there are two issues that to me have really been kind of front and center, talked about a lot amongst coaches and people in communities, and that's parental overreach, trying to overstep bounds and interfere, and the public versus private school battle, and some of the top athletes that would be in the FCAC that are playing in private schools right now. And I think that we see that most during basketball season. So I wanted to discuss those two things today. And I've got a good group of people coming on. In a little bit, we're going to have Staples basketball star Sam Klacko. We're going to take a little break and talk about the current with the star goaltender of New Canaan's girls lacrosse team, CC Patterson. And then we've got Norwalk Athletic Director Doug Marchetti, Dan Woog, who is an author, former Staples boys soccer coach, and Wilton football coach E.J. D'Annunzio. Two things I just want to start with in terms of, and I'll keep repeating this, I don't tell anybody how to live, so there are times where I think a private school might be a better bet than a public school. I really am talking a lot about those who think they're going to go from one level of play to a higher level by transferring. And I think we have to protect coaches, and there are a lot of good coaches that are not coaching anymore because they're just tired of dealing with everything and just the parental interference. And I mean that specifically, those who talk about playing time, strategy, what position their kids should be playing. But leading off, and he's a parent and a coach. In fact, he's been on a lot because his team just won the FCAC championship for the first time in over six decades in boys basketball. And that's Rutgers coach Dave Goldschmidt. Dave, how you doing?
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing good. Long time no talk.
I know. Seriously, it's been a while. How's your break been? I know you're into March Madness, so how's your break been?
I don't know if this is a good thing or bad thing. I literally have not missed a minute of the tournament. I haven't gone. My friends have been mad at two Friday nights and Saturday nights. The only thing I've done to move off my recliner is to watch some games on the treadmill.
Oh, I love it. At least you're working out and keeping healthy.
I'm having a good bracket, though. This could be I thought I was going to lose because I went chalk, and I picked the right year to go with a chalk tournament.
You sure did.
All right, let's, as much as I would talk college hoops for an hour and a half. Let's first, just in terms of, because in one area you have a different take than anybody. But before we get to that, just, you agree it's been one reason we haven't been able to get boys basketball on an upward trajectory back towards what it used to be is that a lot of the top players are not playing in the league anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just more options than there were in the past. And, you know, I think a lot of these really skilled players are seeing other skilled players leave, and they think that that's the path to the next level. So you know, I think there are a variety of reasons to that. We do see the trend happening.
I think, and this is my, I always say this, my biggest pet peeve with high school sports, or probably my biggest, is when you talk about kids going Division II or Division III, people act dismissive, like if you're not going Division I, you're not a true college athlete. And you know what? If you're playing Division II, if Division III, if you're playing college sports, you're a really good athlete. How many high school athletes are not playing college sports? So. I mean, You've got a son on the who's the captain of the Staples baseball team. I mean, can you ever? What are your thoughts? Just it bothers me. People that want to take a year out of their lives because they want to go to Division I instead of playing at Division II or III.
Well, I think each situation is very different. You know, I think it depends on the advice that the child's getting. It you know, depends on their level, depends on their future and their potential. You know, in my case, you know, Jake is fortunate enough to be going to play baseball Trinity next year. And just having gone through the whole summer recruiting process with him, there are a lot of really, really good baseball players out there. So, you know, to have that opportunity to go play at the next level is special. You know, it depends on where you're, what your goals are, whether they're academic, whether they're playing at the highest level. But I really think, Dave, it's very situational. But there, to your point, there's absolutely no shame. And, you know, I think the stat was 7% of all high school athletes are going on to play at the next level. So I think there's no shame at all in going to play at any school at the next level. So it's an incredible accomplishment. And you know, I'm proud of him and proud of all the kids that have an opportunity to do that.
And you look at it just because of where we live, a lot of these kids are going to really good liberal arts New England schools, and they're getting a great education and getting to play. I mean, Jake's going to get a Trinity education, you know, and 4 years after, he's gonna be in a very marketable situation if he has his father's brains. I think too many times those kids that are chasing Division I and go and leave the FCAC, they end up, I bet if there was a way to do the study, 98% of the time they go to the same place that they would have if they stayed in the FCAC, and they give up a lot by not playing in the FCAC.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I was a three-sport athlete, not a very good one, but I was a three-sport athlete in high school, and what I remember most about my high school time was pasta dinners with my friends, or going to the local restaurant after a football game to watch the highlight of the football game. Just the community walking around town. Like, I know you have Sam coming on next. You know, everywhere he goes, that kid is idolized. You know, whether it's, again, whether it's a local deli that's giving him a free sandwich or whether he's going to a youth basketball game, people are coming over to him to ask for autographs, and he just makes them feel really special. So, you know, yes, there are some situations where I feel like going to maybe a prep school or getting competition is important to show some of these college basketball coaches that you can play, or baseball coaches that can play at a higher level or against higher competition. But to me, public school, there's nothing better than public school high school sports you know, the community and what it all stands for. So I'm a huge proponent of kids staying. Obviously, I'm a high school public school basketball coach, and I've spent a lot of my time trying to create an environment for my athletes and my basketball players where they feel like they have a path to whatever their next step is at the next level. It's hard to say, because depending upon what their situation is with their current coaching staff, there are plenty of kids that have gone to prep school who have made it to the next level, and there are plenty of kids that have gone to prep school that probably would play at that same level if they stayed in the public school system.
How about your position, since we're going to be talking about sports parents too, and it's happened in different sports, not any of the two you're closest with at Staples, but you know, I know of one coach recently leaving because of parental interference, and I don't know if you've ever had to deal with any. You've only been at Staples for 3 years, and you got a pretty good group of parents. I don't know if you've ever had to deal with, you know, parents telling you strategy, or, you know, what you should be doing, what position kids should be playing, I don't know as a parent if you're ever tempted to do that with Jack, or what your thoughts on parental interference. You see it as being a problem?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we all have opinions about everything that happens in life. As a human being, right? Like, everybody has an opinion. So for me, and I'm totally comfortable with that, you know, I'm a coach. I watch my son play baseball. I sit down the right field line when I watch my kid play because if I'm going to have an opinion, I'd probably rather speak it to myself. And, you know, I understand and try to respect, having seen both sides of that, that it's hard not to have an opinion, and I understand it. So, again, I try to – and in the past, I would be lying if I told you that I was this, you know, type B personality parent who just watched his kid play and just was very happy-go-lucky. You know, I'm a competitor. A lot of these parents have played in the past and they have opinions, which I completely understand. Some of the opinions are right, right? Some of the opinions are right. You know, I think it's the time and the place and the way you go about doing it. So I kind of have a rule. Like, if somebody wants to talk about their kid, I think it's a partnership that I have with the parent. You know, try to get them headed down the right path, both, you know, both athletically and mentally. But once they start bringing up comparisons to other kids, that's when I kind of cut it off and go about my merry way. But I get it. I empathize with it. But you know, it's a very, very tight line that you gotta make sure that you're on.
Yeah, I mean, if there's an issue outside of those things, you know, there's nothing wrong. It's the parents who make a meeting, you know, and then they want to discuss their kids' playing time, what position they should be playing because of what's going to happen in college, or you know, just things that are a coach's domain. That's where
yeah,
I have
the yeah, I see it a lot. It's funny, like I see a lot of younger coaches whose perspective changes when they have children. There are a lot of people out there that, you know, they complain about parents, and then when they have kids, they start to see the emotional attachment that they have with the kid, and they start like seeing themselves do some of the things that they shunned back in the day. I think a coach has to coach. I think a coach, you know, I always talk to my parents who talk to me, and they say, well, their eyes were fixated on their child for 98% of the basketball game. They're watching their kid when they're on the bench. They're watching their kid when they're in warmups. They're watching their kid when they're playing. They see all the things that are happening with their kid, where my eyes are on that kid. You know, if we take five kids on the court, let's average it out to 20% of the time. So, like, my perception or my decision-making, my understanding of what's going on with that child is definitely not as fixated as the parent is. So there are times where a parent can see something. Usually hopefully it's not strategy related. But if it's something about their body language or something to get them in a place that they can excel, that they're very helpful to me. So, but yes, crossing the line is something that, that I haven't really had to deal with a lot, probably because we've had some success over the first 3 years. But it's something I'm always cognizant of.
Going a little over here, I got your star waiting, but real quickly, and I should have asked you this before. You have a different perspective from what we were talking about before in terms of the private public school thing as it relates to our state tournament. Everybody's saying there should be a separate private school league because they have an inherent advantage. You're one of the few people I've heard who has a different view on that.
Yeah, I'm just, again, to your point, I'm a big public school advocate. So if, you know, if we, in my opinion, if we create a private school league, my fear is that you'll lose even more kids to that public school, to the private school. So it will continue to diminish the quality of play in the public school system. Listen, we have a school of 2,000 kids, 1,800 kids, whatever it is. We have 1,000 boys. We have a supportive youth and a supportive town and community. Like, going and building a program is my job, and being able to create consistency in basketball against some of these schools is my job. So again, I think it speaks to, I understand that public schools are concerned about their ability to compete at the next level. But if you look at a team like Ridgefield, you know, they've made the Final Four the last, you know, previous 2 years, and were possession away of going to Mohegan Sun. You know, we obviously you know, went to the quarters last year, and were, you know, in both games we played with St. Bernard this year, and just happened to, you know, fall a little bit short. So I think that we can compete, and I think it's our job to try to, you know, to do so, especially with the size school that we have. If we're talking about a 500-person school, that might be a little bit different, or a 1,000-person school. But at our size, I think we can compete with with those teams.
All right. Well, Dave, I knew you'd bring a good perspective to this, and you certainly did. So thanks for taking the time. And next Saturday, Staples hosting Fairfield Ward, I'll come stop by that tree and say hello.
Thanks, Dave. I'll talk to you soon. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Dave. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Dave's star, Sam Klocko, is going to join us. You're listening to the Rude Report live on WICC.
Fall high school sports lives right here on WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut. Now, back to the Rudin Report and your host, Dave Rudin.
We're back in enough with Coach Dave Golcher. Let's get to the brains of the Staples operation. I wanted to have a couple of players who have been reached out to by private schools and decided to stay public, and two came to mind. Stanford's E.J. Presley, who was going to come on, and unfortunately, he's on his way to the Yankee game, so didn't have time to talk. But he's had an incredible first 3 years at Staples, big part of helping to lead the Wreckers to their first FCAC championship since 1963 this year. Wreckers star Sam Klocko is with us. Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Nah, thanks for coming on. Number one, most importantly, we all know you suffered the broken wrist right before the start of the postseason. How you feeling? How's the rehab coming?
It's going good. I got my cast off the other day, so now I'm just kind of getting back into things.
All right. You must be dying to start shooting and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you questions. I don't want to put you in a bad situation. So if any question I ask you, you're uncomfortable with, just say so. I remember talking to your dad before, not this past season before, and him talking about how important it was for you to be able to play with your friends that you grew up with and try to win a championship in your town. We got to see that this year. How big was it to win a title with everybody you grew up with? And then, and to me, the thing that stood out in the state second round, your loss to St. Bernard, was all the kids in the stands with their parents who want to be a Sam Klocko someday.
Yeah, I mean, there was honestly nothing better. Like, I've been growing up playing with all these kids my whole life. And, I remember going to the Staples basketball games with them as a kid and looking up to the players on the team. So it was honestly awesome to win a championship for the school and also do it with all my best friends who we've been playing with for my whole life.
I mean, could you imagine winning a title anyplace else and having it feel as special as it did?
No, I mean, honestly, like, winning any championship would be awesome, but I can't think of anything that would top winning one for my town and my school.
In terms of privates looking at you, I don't need to know the schools. How many schools reached out to you?
I mean, there's been a good amount of schools in the NEPSAC. It's like a New England prep school conference. Like, there's been a good amount of coaches that have been reaching out to me, and I've been talking with some of them. But I honestly decide. It would be too hard to walk away from my friends and my school and my coaches and my team for one season. So I decided I'm going back to Staples no matter what. But I'm not ruling out after my senior year, maybe a post grad option. I'm still deciding on whether I go to prep school after.
Yeah. And to me, if you're going to do it, it sounds it makes more sense to do it after you graduate and take a post grad year. To me, that's entirely different than coming for a year or two and then going. What kind of pitches do they give you? Why do they tell you what's going to be better there for you than if you stay at Staples?
I mean, the main thing is it's better competition, because any basketball players or in any sport who go to those schools are there specifically for that sport. And at Staples, some of our better players, basketball was their second or third sport. So it's a little different. But so they definitely say the competition, and then it's better to get more college looks when you go to prep schools. and you're able to like be with your team longer in the off season, and just like stuff like that that are like their main pitches.
And for somebody like you, everybody's going to know who you are. I mean, you don't have to go. You're at Staples. Number one, and almost any college, if they're doing their due diligence, they know who you are. They're not going to find, you know, they're not going to miss out on somebody. I don't know if you agree or not in your case. To me, I was just saying this to your coach, almost 100% of the time, I think, kids that leave their school and, you know, their high school mid-career and go elsewhere are almost always going to end up at the same place they would have if they stayed.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, like, dependent on each kid. Like, every kid's college situation is different. But there's a lot of times where, like, going to their private school like, wasn't needed. They could have got the same look staying in the SEAC.
Are you kind of excited? You're losing your best friend on the team, Adam, but you guys have everybody coming back. You kind of, you know, winning one has been great. What about winning two and being able to be on the court for the championship when you do it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the goal is to do the repeat. You know, I had a lot of fun seeing my team win it from the bench, but it would be nice if I could win it on the court for once.
You were, even though you aren't on the court, you made a huge role to that. Who do you like today in the Elite Eight?
I like Tennessee over Houston.
I agree with you on that one.
I don't know. And then I like Auburn. I can't see Auburn losing.
Yep, I have Auburn. I actually have Auburn winning Houston. Beating Houston in the final, but I did that because everybody else was taking Duke, Florida. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I agree with you on that. So, Sam, I really appreciate your coming on and adding an important perspective to that. And most importantly, again, speedy recovery. And I look forward to seeing you on the court soon. And thanks for taking the time.
Yep. Thanks a lot for having me.
Okay, that was Sam Klocko. We're going to take a break, and we come back. We're going to take a brief respite from all the serious talk and look into spring sports with one of the FCX top athletes, New Canaan lacrosse goaltender C.C. Patterson. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
Coaches' interviews, game previews, and everything in between. The Rudin Report is live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back, having a little bit of a technical issue here. Hopefully, I've had some issues here and now to my headphones. Hopefully, it won't be an issue anymore, but a little behind, and joining me right now, she's the number 3 rated player in the country in her class, and that's pretty good. New Canaan goaltender C.C. Patterson. C.C., how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. How's practice going so far? How's the preseason?
It's great. We have only had a couple practices since the season started, but they've been great. We had a play day yesterday. We had 3 games, went 3-0, so that was good.
How's the team looking? You lost a lot of players, but you guys have a lot of talent coming back.
Yeah, we lost 10 people, so we've got a lot of new kids, but the chemistry's great this year, and a lot of the juniors and sophomores and even the freshmen really have been stepping up, which is great to see.
How about you? We've talked about this a lot when I've interviewed you. You're one of the few 3-sport athletes that really, really excel at one sport. How hard is it for you to go right from basketball into lacrosse?
It's definitely an adjustment that takes a few weeks. I think every year I just need a minute to get into it. But, I mean, it's just great to be back playing lacrosse. I just love this sport, and I just love being back with this team. I think each team I play on is very different, and just coming back to this one is always great.
I guess because you're so used to doing this, you can't, and maybe not be able to answer this, but is it harder when you've been playing 2 sports to get right back into the swing of things and be as sharp as you normally would? Or is it Is it just a case? And for you, you get a little bit of a break between basketball and lacrosse.
Yeah, I got like a week, which was nice. But I think it's definitely nice coming in. Like, there's definitely some advantages and disadvantages coming off of another sport. I definitely feel like so ready to be playing lacrosse. On the other hand, if you're playing every day, you might, you know, burn out a little bit towards the end of the season, which I think is an advantage. But I'm definitely not as sharp, and like, that's just going to take a little bit of getting into. But I think that basketball also, like all the other sports, helped me be a better lacrosse player and teammate.
What about the New Canaan Darien battle this year?
I think it is going to be a very good battle this year. I really can't wait to see how that shapes out. Don't know much about their team yet. Obviously, it's still really early, but I'm really excited to see how that works this year.
I mean, it's been a great year for you. You're part of you're a center defender for the girls' soccer team that won FCAC and state championships for the first time in 15 years. How big would it be to do that again in lacrosse to finish off your career?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. That would be incredible. It was just such an amazing soccer season. I couldn't ask for a better ending, and I hope for the same for lacrosse.
When you read something, you're the number three senior in your class in the country. What does that make you think? I mean, I can't imagine. Lacrosse is different here. I mean, lacrosse is the best played sport in the FCAC. You're the third best player. There are only two people better than you, according to Inside Lacrosse. How do you keep yourself from getting a swelled head?
I mean, I can't even believe it. I can't, like, wrap my head around the fact that, like, somebody wrote that down and believes that that's true. I think that there are so many incredible lacrosse players, and, like, it's hard to, like, keep that in the back of my mind when I'm, like, getting scored on and, like, in practice. And, like, I think I honestly forget about it all the time. Like, I'm getting shot on by these amazing girls in practice, and I'm, like, I just can't think like that. Like, it's just something that's in the back of my mind, something that can give me confidence when I need it, but not something I live off of.
Well, you've had an incredible career so far. It's not over yet, and you're a lot of fun to watch and cover, and I look forward to seeing you out on the field soon. So sorry about the little delays here, but thanks for taking the time, and Cece, I'll see you real soon.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
You too.
All right, that was New Canaan Cece Patterson. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have Norwalk Athletic Director Doug Marchetti. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC. Okay, we're back, and we're going to go back to talking about recruiting of public school FCAC athletes and parental interference. And there are a few athletic directors who may be on the same level as my next guest, but not many. I have much respect for him as I do anybody in the FCAC, and that's Norwalk Athletic Director Doug Marchetti. Doug, how you doing?
Hi, Dave. Good morning. Nice to be on with you.
Nah, thanks for coming on. You're also, we may have a minute or so, outgoing head of the FCAC football committee. But first of all, let's talk in terms of public-private. You seem to lose, from what we could tell, more athletes than anybody. How frustrating is it, and do you just feel handcuffed in terms of dealing with it?
It gets frustrating at times, but, you know, I've kind of come to the realization, Dave, that who is Doug Marchetti or any of our coaches to tell a parent, you know, they're making a mistake if they choose to go someplace else. If they feel that's a better situation for their kid, so be it. You know, we feel we have a lot to offer in Norwalk, and I think you had Sam on a little bit earlier, you know, talking about his situation. You know, we have great teams. It's a great league. It's very competitive. And on top of it, you're talking a ton of great academic schools as well. So, you know, to have to go elsewhere to get an outstanding high school experience, I just don't get it. But, you know, if the sway is, you know, it's better competition or it's a better environment. Again, if a parent thinks that's the best situation or a better situation for their kid, hey, ultimately, we're going to coach the kids that want to come to Norwalk High School. We're going to do a good job with them, and they're going to leave in a real good spot. That's kind of been our our take on the whole situation.
I mean, the fact that you're losing so many kids, it's just, I mean, it's telling you how many good kids are being produced in the city. Are you ever in a situation where a parent or a kid will come up to you to try to discuss the situation and give you a chance to sort of sell what the benefits are to staying in Norwalk? Or is it just one of those things where kids are coming in and telling their coaches they're going?
Yeah, that's pretty much been up to date. When kids have left, I've never entertained any conversation with any parent or family where someone has come in to say, hey, listen, we're thinking about making a move. And as you know, I think, you know, the CIAC rules are if you leave as a freshman, you're eligible right away. If it's after your freshman year, you'd have to, sit in terms of the eligibility rules, 50% of the season. So when we lose kids after their freshman year, they're eligible to play right away wherever they end up. But in terms of, any conversations, hey, Marchetti, sell us on staying at Norwalk High. No, I have not had those conversations at all.
If somebody came in, what would you tell them in terms of why they should stay at Norwalk?
Well, I would explain to them, listen, we feel we're a good school with a solid athletic program. We're an education-based athletic program. We worry about, the whole kid. We worry about them athletically, academically, socially, emotionally. We feel we offer a good product. And, for a kid that wants that high school experience, again, I was listening earlier as Sam spoke, staying at Staples in his town with his friends, the kids he grew up playing with. You're going to get that in Norwalk. I see it even like when we play a game against McMahon. People think it's, a rival game and, there's a lot of dislike and whatever. To be honest with you, David, probably couldn't be further from the truth. Those games are over. These kids grew up in town together. Norwalk's unique, just like Stanford and West Hill and Ward and Ludlow. These kids grew up playing youth ball together. So they're friends. The day they play, they want to win. But, there's not a whole lot of animosity sometimes when the game is over. You see kids and families and parents, hugging and taking pictures and, it's a great community. And, if people want to be part of it, we hope they want that full high school experience in the community they grew up in. If they feel, they're better served going someplace else. It's a situation where if you feel that way, I guess I can't stop you. But I think we have an awful lot to offer to get people to stay.
It's part of it. I guess you're so used to it happening now. You have the right perspective on it. But it's got to be frustrating, and especially for your coaches, when you know what you could be if these kids stayed, and you know the end game, what they would get out of it graduating from Norwalk to be in the situation you're in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, if you look at, where colleges are now, we just had a workshop a few weeks ago, a prospective college athlete seminar, where we had a number of college coaches and college administrators come down and talk about the process from the time you're in high school through the recruiting process and so on and so forth. It was a terrific seminar, terrific workshop with the people that we had. And, with the transfer portal, I mean, let's face it, colleges are looking for college kids. They're not looking for high school kids. Look at UConn men's basketball. I mean, we may have a great player at Norwalk High School. Danny Hurley's looking in the transfer portal before he's looking in the high school system now. Or any place else for that matter. So to think that it's going to help you, get into colleges, and I don't know. I mean, just the landscape of college athletics is changing so quickly. Are you better off maybe going to post-grad year or playing at a different school and then looking to transfer, into a school of your choice, let's say, after you have a little bit of a college resume? It's kind of uncharted waters right now, but, again, if you can stay in one place where you're going to have a great experience, I hope kids would take advantage of that.
Yeah, I can certainly understand the post-grad year. I have a harder time with the middle of your high school career. Let's segue, because I also wanted to get an athletic director's perspective on this. It's been a real topic in terms of parental overreach. I know of several coaches who have who've stopped coaching because it's just gotten to be unbearable for them. I know a couple of places where coaches have left or have not been rehired. And, according to a couple of those coaches, it's had to be because of parental interference. You tell me if this is too draconian or not. You know, if I became an athletic director at a school, my first rule would be with parents, if I had a meeting with them, if you want to talk about playing time, what position you're playing, or team strategy, we're not even going to give you a forum to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you'd be 100% right. You know, if a parent wants to meet with me about, you know, like you said, playing time, I have no control over that whatsoever. You know, tryouts and who made the team and who didn't make the team, I have no control over that. I trust my coaches have had a fair and impartial tryout process, and they've, you know, gone through the names and ratings and, you know, whatever system they're using to pick those rosters. I have no control over that. So to want to entertain me in a conversation, it's really not, I hate to say it's something I don't know much about, but given each individual team, I really don't know, you know, where those kids stand, you know, and again, in terms of playing time, that's a decision that the kids have to have. You know, unfortunately, Dave, I've had many conversations with parents, and one of the first things out of their mouth is, you know, my kid doesn't know I'm here. Please don't tell him. I don't want there to be retribution. You know, is that speaking for the kid? Is that speaking for the parent? I'm a huge advocate that if a kid has an issue, you know, have the kid address the coach. And I say this in all of my preseason meetings. Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Rudin, if Dave has an issue with coach, guess what? Dave has to have that meeting with the coach. And listen, we all acknowledge that's going to be maybe the most difficult conversation Dave Rudin, the high school athlete, may ever have. He's going to approach coach, you know, pit in his stomach, lump in his throat, whatever. And I tell my coaches, listen, this kid's coming to you. It takes a lot of guts to maybe have for this kid to have this conversation, but it needs to be had. And we want the kids to initiate it. That's part of the growing up process. You know, it's really easy for, you know, mom and dad to come in and have the kids just sit there and listen and never advocate for themselves, speak for themselves. You know, so when parents come in and they, you know, they want to have that conversation, unless it's a situation where they feel, you know, their kids are being mistreated, abused, you know, things like that. And again, those are few and far between. I really don't have much to offer in a conversation with playing time and things like that.
Yeah, or even with the coaches. And I mean, from our generation, and we're in a different world right now, I can remember I don't think I ever complained with a coach, but if I did at the dinner table, you know, my parents would tell me to shut up and suck it up and go play harder or go work harder, or, you know, stop crying. I think we're in a little bit of a different generation. I could kind of get it, and I, you know, it should be the kid and not the parent. You know, and a kid going in and saying, you know, I thought I should be playing a little bit more. What am I not doing that you'd like to see out of me? That to me sounds like the more reasonable approach to things.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we advocate kids do.
Maybe I could be an athletic director.
Yeah.
I you have way, way, way too many headaches, and you're dealing right now with a new school being built, no fields. So I'm not going to put you in that position. We're talking about Norwalk sports. This should be a pretty good spring. I know I'm coming down to practice tomorrow or Tuesday to do a story on Maddie Collins, your softball pitcher. Mm-hmm. I know your baseball team's got a lot of pitching, and you got Jackson Irmo, and you should have a pretty good spring on the diamonds.
I think so. I think we're poised to have a pretty good year. Coaches have done a great job. You know, I look at softball. You mentioned Maddie Collins. Kerry Nadell has done a great job with our kids over at going over to McMahon. You know, John Cross and his people have made it a very seamless transition. We've worked very well together, us using the field over there. Our junior varsity team will be using the Brookside School field so far, you know, within the first week. No issues or problems there. Knock on wood, I've been very fortunate. All the planning that we put in place for going to other locations, you know, our tennis program going to Grassroots and our boys and girls soccer program going to West Rocks Middle School and field hockey and sub-varsity football at Nathan Hale. The first year in, Dave, it's gone very, very well. Very few hiccups. So very pleased with how that's going. And that's a credit to our coaches and kids who have embraced it and not used it as a crutch or as an excuse that it's an issue or it's a problem. Coaches have done a great job pivoting and doing what we got to do. And, you know, we're turning out a good product, as I said earlier. So, yeah, I couldn't be happier.
You're in you're the outgoing chairman of the FCAC football committee.
Back to the action. action. The Rudin Report, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back, and I'm finishing up here with Norwalk Athletic Director Doug Marchetti. Doug, sorry about that, and appreciate your patience. Just wanted to ask your outgoing head of the football committee. FCAC's been, in terms of dominating in postseason, being, you know, having 3-4 teams in the final top 10 winning state championships, it's kind of a glory time right now. As you leave, are there any issues? What's the state of FCAC football? And if there's anything you could change or do anything to improve, what would it be?
I tell you, I think we're in great shape. I think, you know, we've got some fantastic programs, some fantastic coaches, you know, that have obviously had a lot of success. And I think when you see that success, you know, you kind of realize where the bar is. In order to be successful, you've got to work to try and attain, you know, that kind of level of success. And, you know, for some programs, it's easier than others. You know, some programs have made great strides in terms of, you know, becoming very competitive. You know, you look at a guy like Mitch Ross at Ludlow, who's done a fantastic job with his program. And, you know, Mars has done a great job at Trumbull. And, you know, Lou Marinelli, as far as I'm concerned, is the gold standard in terms of, you know, how programs should be run. So, you know, the rest of the coaches realize, you know, that's where the bar is. You know, to compete with the, you know, the St. Joe's and the Darien's and the Canaan's and Staples and whatever, it's a tough task. But yeah, that's why you're part of the FCAC. You know, that's what we all want to be part of that league. Well, being part of that league comes with its advantages and disadvantages for some.
Well, Doug, next time you have a kid that wants to, is thinking about transferring, send him to me, and I'm going to tell him that wherever he goes, he's not going to find a better athletic director.
And, well, I appreciate that.
And I seriously mean that, and I think everybody who just listened to you for the last 20 minutes knows why I said that. But thanks a lot for taking the time, and I'm sure I'll see you out on the diamond pretty soon.
That sounds great, Dave. Look forward to seeing you. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks, Doug.
Yes, sir.
That was Norwalk Athletic Director Doug Marchetti. We're going to take another final quick break, and then we come back. Dan Woog will be joining us. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
Get the rundown on this week's games now on the Rudin Report live. WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back in. If I read my next guest's entire resume, we'll use up the remaining time I have for him. So for the purposes of our conversation, he's a prolific author. He has done everything from coach to write about the Staples boys soccer program. And if you go to staplessoccer.com, you have what, if there's a better site for a high school sports program in the country, I'd like to see it. But you know, you should just take a look just to go see what's on there. And he also is the voice of Westport through his 06880 blog, which now that we don't really have, now that there's not really any local newspaper in Westport, becomes even a more vital resource for information. And the one thing that he doesn't talk about on his resume is he was my eighth grade soccer coach, and that's Dan Woog. Dan, how you doing?
Dave, it's a pleasure to be on and an honor to follow Doug Marchetti.
Yeah, Doug's incredible, and you're with what you do, as evidenced by you getting inducted last year into the FCAC Hall of Fame, right up there.
It's been a joy. It's been an honor, and I've certainly met some great people along the way.
Wanted to talk to you, and this kind of gets into the parental interference, because there've been two issues in Westport, and you've really been breaking the news and keeping the town on top of it through 06880. One of the issues I know you're in a peripheral way sort of involved with, so we won't talk about that. But there was just an issue with the boys tennis coach, who's a former Staples student and athlete, Chris Rasopoulos, been the coach for 14 years, won 8 state championships and 5 league championships during that time. And he's also the director of tennis and intensity tennis club in Norwalk. And he found out, I believe it was in January, that he was going to be not going to be rehired and not given a reason. And I'm going to let you, that's the lead in for there to talk about your reporting and what happened and where things stand.
Yeah, it really is just an unfortunate situation, and it's not not the only one at Staples, not the only one around the state or the country. It's sort of indicative, I think, of parents who are becoming more vociferous, whether it's playing time or that was not the instance here. But for whatever reason, their dissatisfaction spills into process and procedure. You know, they want a coach gone, and they do whatever they can to make sure that happens. In Chris Russofilos' case, he has been rehired. The Board of Ed determined that the proper process was not followed by the administrators, sort of a technicality. But Chris has, who is beloved by his athletes for what he does for them on and off the court. So he's back. But as you indicated, it speaks to a larger issue of process and parents who are becoming really emboldened. You know, I think Staples is not unique. When you register your son or daughter for a tryout, you sign, you click on, I guess it's like an Apple agreement, but nowhere near as complicated. But you say, at Staples anyway, in case of an issue, here are the steps. You talk to the coach first. You talk to the athletic director second. You talk to the principal third. You talk to the superintendent of schools fourth. And more it seems that parents are jumping the line. They're going above the coach at the outset. And even more unfortunately, they're being listened to.
And that's my biggest issue. Now, as Dan's saying, I want to stress here, this isn't a pick on Westport issue. It's just something that happened in Westport that, as Dan said, is indicative of what's going on in the FSEAC and across the country. And that's the part I don't understand. You were the soccer coach at Staples. Did you ever have to deal with parents coming and talking where they don't belong? And by that, I mean playing time, what position, strategy?
Did I have to deal with that? That's like asking, you know, did I put cones on the field? Yes, I did. I'll give you a couple of examples. We had a boy who was a starter on a state championship squad, a starter, and his parents felt that he was in the wrong position. Don't know what we could have done differently. We won the final game of the season. But you know, their dissatisfaction was out of all proportion to what was going on. We eventually came up, my staff and I came up with a rule that if a parent sent an email or made a phone call about issues like playing time, positioning, that sort of thing, they had to include their son on that email or on that phone call. You know, so many of these, any coach I know can relate to the email that begins, my son or my daughter would kill me if they knew I was writing this. Well, they would kill you for a reason, because it's wrong, because their son or daughter knows that the parent's issue, you know, is really out of line, that the kids would be mortified. So we had that rule. That rule does not mean that we don't want to talk to coaches, that we don't want to talk to parents. We do. We want to talk to them about important issues like you know, if there's something going on in the kid's life that will impact their, you know, their time with us. Parents are splitting up. There's a, you know, the grandparent is dying, or the dog died, anything like that. You know, we really want to know. We don't want to know that, you know, Johnny should be a center midfielder instead of a right back, or that, you know, the parent calculated that, that Jimmy had 22 minutes in the last game and only 19 in the, you know, the most recent one. Having said that, I know a lot of the emails I get, or I got when I was coaching, you know, I'd look at the timestamp, and if it was midnight or 1 a.m., I'd say to myself, you know, that parent has been sitting there stewing since the end of the game, probably been doing it with a couple of cocktails, and, you know, I take that for what it's worth. And the final thing I'll say is that so often it is really the parent's issue. There are so many times when we've had a kid who the parent says is having a miserable time and we're mistreating the kid, and, you know, the kid no longer has love for soccer and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the kid sort of buys into that because that's what he hears at home and in the car. And then a year later, we'll see that player. He's graduated. And he comes up and he's got a smile on his face. He gives us a hug. You know, Dan, how's it going? And sometimes it's the same reaction from the parents. You know, they look at me like a long-lost friend rather than somebody they were drunk texting at 2 in the morning. Not always with the parents, but sometimes. And that leads to the really important issue or point, which is that it's a long game. We're in it for the long haul with these kids. We're in it from freshman year to senior year and the growth that takes place, and we're in it beyond. We want them to be involved as alumni. So the little narrow focus on playing time in the past week or, you know, positioning is a minor issue. To get the parents to understand that is a major lift. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a minor issue.
I think getting to your team policy that you instituted, I am pretty certain you'll agree on this. I think however things work in a town or city school system, whether it comes from the athletic director, the principal, or the superintendent, it basically should be a policy that parents are not going to get a forum to talk to coaches regarding playing time strategy and things like that, which is the coach's domain and why the coach was hired in the first place.
I was very lucky to have a really good athletic director in Marty Lisovic. And Marty was a coach's AD. And he headed off a lot of things just by telling parents, you know, in an understated way, we will take care of it. The school will take care of it. That's not to say it didn't, you know, reach the level beyond that from time to time. But I was fortunate to have a really good athletic director and really supportive administrators. And the issue comes, I think, when administrators, not with malice and not because they dislike coaches, but they hear a lot and they, you know, if somebody gets to them, they, you know, they listen. And there's always two sides to every story. There's always 12 sides to every story. And it's incumbent on athletic directors and principals and superintendents, you know, to really do their due diligence and listen to the complaint, listen to the coach, talk to the assistants, talk to the players, and understand that, and this is a really important point, Dave, the coach, as a soccer coach, I had to look out for the 11 players on the field and the, you know, 14 or 15 others on the bench, not to mention the sub-varsity kids coming up. I had to think about and really do what's best for all of those kids. The parent is looking at his or her own child, looking at it that lens. You know, sometimes they couldn't even tell you who scored the goal if it wasn't their own kid, because they're just watching their own kid. That's something that parents do. They do it naturally. But the best sports parents are the ones who look at their son or daughter in the context of the entire team. And when the kid gets in the car after a game, they don't start harping on the coach. They don't start harping on the kid's mistake. They do one of two things. They say, "Did you have a good time today?" Or they shut the hell up.
I agree with you on everything, and you've always had a good perspective as a coach. Is it correct with Chris's situation that it's the whole issue? And it was a couple of variables, but it stemmed also in part from a kid not being named captain.
That is what I've heard. I don't know for sure.
Okay, that's.
But that brings up the whole other issue of captaincies, and captain is a privilege. It's not a right. Kids get named captain for a variety of reasons, not necessarily because they're the best player, or not necessarily because, you know, for whatever reason. A captain is a leader. A captain is someone that players look up to. And coaches more and more are being pressured by administrators and by parents to name captains who are not leaders. And that goes to a whole – we could do another hour on, you know, social issues and why kids – are not leaders, why they haven't been taught how to lead. But captains are a huge issue with parents and coaches, and it's a tough one. It really is.
All what we're talking about right now is it can't be dealt with in 90 minutes, and I'm hoping to try to put something together, hopefully at the same place you do your podcast from, and delve into this a little bit more. Real quickly, we got like a minute left. Turning something a negative into a positive, reading your reporting, it sounds like Staples is going to reevaluate how it does things, make sure that a coach isn't put in a situation where they find out why they're not being rehired. But this is an opportunity, I think, for Staples to really be ahead of the game and put something together that that other schools and school systems can look to and copy.
Yeah, and I have a lot of faith that they will. Process is important. Whether you're a coach, an administrator, you need to have policies in place. You need to communicate those policies, and you need to follow those policies. If we can find a way to eliminate parents jumping the line and parents – the last thing I'll say – you know, if you're a parent and you're the head of a company, you're a lawyer, you're whatever you are, you know, you're a doctor, you're an electrician, you would not want the coach coming in and telling you, you know, you filed the brief the wrong way, or, you screwed up the plumbing and you put the wrong pipe in. That would never happen.
Yeah,
but those parents have no problem telling a coach how to coach. So once you've got those processes in place, that's half the battle.
Well, Dan, we're just about out of time here. I knew you would add so much to the conversation. Thanks a lot for joining us, and I'll see you soon.
My pleasure. And you know what? Your parents never called me about your playing time.
I never complained. Thanks. Okay, that was Dan Wogue, and that's the Rudin Report Live for this week. We'll be back with spring previews next week. Have a good 7 days, everybody.